Welcome everyone, welcome to our third episode of the Science and Healthcare Sustainability Podcast. If you've watched our first two episodes, you'll notice that we have industry leaders and business owners who provide sustainable and healthcare alternatives to current products. So we had Dan from Econics publishing his BioBins, and we had Danielle from Recycle Lab who tells all about recycling laboratory waste. It's a real treat. This month we've got Jay from Biograd, so we've got someone on the other side of the fence who's actually using these products or potentially using some of these products, and he's going to tell us all about how Biograd and healthcare and science in general could be more sustainable.
Kick off with the first question, which is the same question every single week, no matter who we have. What is sustainability to you?
Sustainability for me is about leaving as little impact on the planet while we're here, and it's something that for me came to life about 10 years ago, seeing the global effects change firsthand. So I want to make sure as much as possible that me and my day, family life and work life are doing everything we possibly can to make as little impact on the world and leave any trace of us being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Similar vein to our other guests who've said sort of similar things, and I think we're all on the same page. People working within science all see the scale of the problem. What do you think the scale of that problem is? You obviously see it firsthand.
Well, this is it's really big. So most of the emissions, so 5% of the UK emissions equates to 2 gigatons of waste each year from the healthcare and science industry. So it's a phenomenal amount, where even if we can make a 1% decrease in that, the amount of CO2 we'd save, the amount of plastics we could save, is mind-blowing. That 2 gigatons of waste every year, the stuff that we can absolutely do to change that, change our practices in science, change our practices in the clinical environment. Things like not wearing gloves when there's no requirement to, when you're just touching a patient to take their observations, or when you're unpacking something in outside the lab. So I've seen scientists wear gloves to unpack boxes that might just have paper in, or disposable equipment. There's no reason to wear PPE all the time when you're doing these patient contacts or in the science, and if we can change people's mindsets, that's something that we need to do.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, we offer a product that's biodegradable, nitrile glove that's biodegradable, but absolutely the best solution is don't use it at all.
Yeah.
Save them, save 100% of the cost of the glove and save 100% of the carbon that goes into making it. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and most of the gloves that are biodegradable don't make it that far anyway.
It's a good point. They just get thrown away.
I think people are so used to seeing a black bin, a yellow bin, or the bio bins or sharps containers, and throwing everything in there, even waste that shouldn't go in a clinical waste, because it's more expensive to dispose of. It gets burnt in 9 cases out of 10. That if we put them in a normal waste or recycling waste, if you can decontaminate it before and it can go a different route to disposable, we should be doing it as much as we can.
Absolutely, yeah. I think what you're saying there, and what we had Danielle say on her episode as well, is a lot of it's down to education. You know, the solutions are out there, practices are proven that they work, that are more sustainable. We just need to tell more people, and hopefully that's the point of things like this, where we can actually get the word out. And that leads us nicely, I'm probably stepping your question here, Al, so apologies about that, but what do you do and where? I know there's an education arm to what you do.
So from Biograd, we're based in Wavertree Technology Park, and we operate across the UK and work internationally. We've got a big presence in Shanghai. So we have lots of interactions with students where we can start talking about sustainability within the Biograd education arm that teaches around 100 students a week in life science skills, whether that's preparing them to go into that sector or those that are coming to us for continued professional development. We bring sustainability into that course by only using the PP that we actually have to. We use BioBins, which you've got quite not here, And we are also looking at other things that we can do now immediately and in the future. We've got goals to work towards. So we've got a 2035 vision as to where we want to be. So it's 10 years away, but all the change we want to do are quite large and impactful to hopefully make us net zero. So we're slowly working on that. In the Biograd clinical side and the science side, we only use PPE again when we have to. We're trying to move to all digital, so no papers. All of our clinical records are now electronic, so there's no printing out of loads of documents. Everything's sent by via email. So we're making small little steps that are going to have a large impact. Our biobank produces around 9,000 kilos of CO2 a year alone. So we're working towards changing our freezers that we use so we can make sure we've got the most appropriate model that uses little electric as possible. We want to go completely off grid by 2035 as our aim. Now by next year we want to make sure all the energy that we do take from the grid is green energy from renewable sources. So we're working hard on that plan to get there. We want to be as sustainable as we possibly can.
Brilliant. So probably the most interesting part of the podcast in terms of questions, how did you get into it? How did you get into working for Biograd, with Biograd, and what did you do beforehand?
Well, so I started with Biograd in 2020 during COVID, just as lockdown was coming out. And my background is critical care, emergency medicine, some public health. But prior to COVID, I'd been using lots of rapid tests in my previous role on a cruise ship. So I had experience of how to collect PCR samples prior. And the opportunity with Biograd came up to implement a clinical service that would support our partner schools in keeping their children and their staff safe when they go back. So we started offering PCR tests to our partner schools. And gradually, as we went through the pandemic and travel became possible and people returning back to the offices, we were asked to do pre-travel tests, workplace testing to keep everybody safe. And it grew and grew, so we ended up white labeling our product to all of these companies that popped up. So we were turning over 15,000-20,000 PCR tests a day. We were the only lab that got the ISO 15189 accreditation after the government decided what they were going to do, from not having it to getting it granted, and then being on the government list as a lab provider and as a clinical provider for the COVID-19 tests. So it's normally a process that takes about 18 months. We did it in 4 months. Wow. And we had to produce something like 500 documents of clinical policies, wow, procedures, SOPs, evidence that our processes work. So that was a phenomenal task. But I think from my experience in other roles where I've been an operational leader, a clinical leader, the team were able to bring that into Biograd. And since the pandemic, we wanted our post-pandemic plan, which is where we're up to now. Biograd Education's stronger than it ever was before the pandemic, because we lost all of that work during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Education stopped, we couldn't train anybody. Yeah. It was difficult to you can't do practical skills online. So we had to pivot. We went to the COVID test, and now the COVID is finished. We're in our post-pandemic plan, which is multifaceted. We've got the Biograd Biobank, which is a repository of samples, human samples, and we're licensed by the HTA, the Human Tissue Authority. And then we've also got our clinical diagnostic side, which helps with clinical tests, clinical trials. You can come and have some private bloods done with us, and we can send you those back out. So you can either go back to your own private healthcare provider or your GP. And our turnaround is, 24 hours, 48 hours for these blood tests, where normal, you go through the NHS, it can take weeks. Even getting an appointment to have the bloods taken can take 2 or 3 weeks. where they can just pop into us, get the tests, and results next day, hopefully. Yeah. And we've got Biograd Prenatal, which is the private cord blood banking of stem cells. So if your child or a family member gets sick in the future, we could use those stem cells to hopefully provide a cure or a treatment. Stem cells hold the key to lots of treatment. We know it can do about 85 things, but the research is still ongoing for what else it can treat. And then with the most important and the thing that's at the top of our list at the moment is the Women's Health Research Tissue Bank, which only launched a few weeks ago. That's been about 18 months in the making to get to this point, because it's also regulated by the HTA for the storage of the samples. We've had to get ethics approval that will allow us also to extend ethics to researchers, but also to allow researchers to come to Biograd and buy their samples that they need. So we've got PBMCs, serum, and that can be from, you know, peripheral blood, cord blood. So we're working with some of the local hospitals that allow us to collect cord tissue, cord blood. And these samples are all donated by women. Anywhere from the age of 13 upwards can donate. And in some cases, younger children can, like if they lose their teeth, their milk teeth, they can donate, because the stem cells and teeth that we know that could probably do things to help science. So we've got a huge range of products in our biobank, research tissue bank, available to researchers. And it's often cheaper to come to Biograd. Because we're based in the UK and we are up north rather than down south, we can get all of our samples anywhere in 24 hours, less than that. But because you're not going to the US or into the EU to get these samples, we end up being cheaper because the distance travelled is shorter for the sample to go from us to the researcher. But then also we haven't got the flights that the samples will have to go on, the extra storage, so the cold chain is shorter, so they need less dry ice or whatever or the other requirements for it. So it's so much cheaper, it's less CO2 impact on the environment, which comes back to the sustainability of our products. Sourced locally, the donors, so Liverpool, but also further afield, people can post their samples to us rather than happen to drive from Manchester to Liverpool. They can come and have their sample, they can do the samples via post for menstrual blood. Again, reducing the CO2 of things travelling. If it's travelling in mass, it's cheaper than single. So that's Biograd in a nutshell. A so just a few things going on.
That's amazing. That's a nice sweet spot that we always try and look for as well, which is these no-brainers where it's cheaper and better for the environment. And it sounds like getting your samples from you instead of the US is a bit of a no-brainer for most researchers.
I've also got half a human, small human mouth in a box, my bedside cabinet at the moment.
Got a donor here.
So I've got some donations for you. My daughter.
What a weird way to phrase it.
I'm not Dexter. But yeah, she's losing her teeth at the moment, and the Tooth Fairy's been really generous with it, but has also kept hold of the teeth.
That's good. And this is something that we like to try and bring into the Tooth Fairy, because we put it in a special packet, comes back to us, we grind it up, and we can send a letter back to that child.
My daughter would absolutely love that. If her tooth gets collected by the Tooth Fairy and she gets a letter saying, well done, you're really helping people in the future, she'd absolutely love that.
Genius idea.
Absolutely. The stem cells that we can get from any of these or the PBMCs, it's going to make a massive difference, particularly when we've got matched samples. So if you've got period blood, you've got peripheral blood, maybe saliva, all from the same patient, and it's been collected every month. The trend that data will give us, particularly in the women's health research, is unprecedented at this moment in time.
Is there a time limit on how long the teeth can kind of
We need the teeth need to be done quite quickly, because once it's dead, effectively the stem cells start to break down. So we need that within 24 hours normally of the tooth coming out.
Okay. Well, she pulls them out quite regularly, so I'll remember that for next time.
But, you know, things like menstrual blood and things, we get that through the post. Yeah. We break that down and we get multiple products from there that are available for researchers. But we also collect all the medical data as well. So you can find out what conditions they've got, what medications they've got, has it changed this month to this month, and what are the physiological parameters that have changed in that sample. Mm. So it's fantastic. And it's a great resource for researchers in the UK and also over the world as well. Yeah. You know, we can ship anywhere in the world, but focus at the moment is the UK.
Yeah. Like many people who travelled during COVID, I was one of them. I was familiar with BioGrad and I was so impressed with how quickly you guys diversified, and you've just given us some background on what goes into that, the 500 documents and things like that. So a huge monumental effort. Do you think that set you up well for post-COVID? Now you're used to being diversifying, reacting quickly. Was it a good sort of hard lesson, COVID?
Yeah, it was a really hard lesson to go from a education provider with a very limited and small clinical side to that being our main part of the business.
Yeah.
When I joined BioGrad, there were 6 members of staff at the peak of BioGrad. We had 450, maybe 500 staff.
Yeah.
And we were also using external agencies to bring in nurses as well. So it was a massive shift in staffing. We had to implement HR, finance, and all the other services that go along with having such a large group of people together working every day. While there's also the pandemic going on, people, movements are restricted. That brings with it mental health needs that we need to make sure that we're meeting. Safety when people are leaving at 12 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning, much quieter because everybody's locked down. How are we going to make sure these people are safe getting home?
Yeah.
So it brought with it lots of unique challenges that none of us have been through before. And as a manager, it was a huge learning curve, but I think I've gained lots of experience that I could take with me all of my roles going forward.
Lampadina had a similar issue, pivoted very quickly, because overnight when we went into lockdown, every single dentist went, you know, that equipment that we wanted, don't want anymore.
We
just watched more than 50% of our orders cancelled overnight. But then very, very quickly they'd come and say, we don't need a microscope anymore, but can you get me some gloves and some masks? Because nobody else can. And we had to pivot very quickly. We had people working from home. Again, we had to get them out, so we had to have, we were trying to do social distancing, one person in the office, one person in the warehouse, people from home taking payments and sending invoices and shipping stuff out. Really difficult, but really interesting period that definitely does make you grow as a business person and as a,
I think it's, for those, the businesses that survived during COVID or thrived during COVID because of the service they provide, think they've all come out a bit stronger and learned some valuable lessons, but been made more aware to keep some reserves, make sure your cash flow and you've got those reserves in the background should something like this happen again. Now we it will happen again, we just don't know when, but you look at history, you know, every 100 years or so there's been a massive pandemic that has killed thousands if not millions of people. So it will happen again, it's just when.
I think you were well set up because you knew the science, you were well placed for what needed to be done, but also from your education perspective, you just said you went from 8 people to 500. All those people needed training and educating, so education for BioGrad didn't stop. If anything, it probably accelerated during the pandemic.
It did, but it wasn't income generating education, which is the key part. Because before the pandemic, education was the key part of BioGrad, and then that income stopped. We had to diversify, but because we'd had the education side, we had lists of hundreds of scientists that we could reach out to.
I see,
do they need employment? Have they been made redundant because their current lab is shut down? So that's how we were able to carry on and grow so quickly, because we had our own organic recruitment lists that we'd been working with for the last 8 years to train scientists and get them back into the lab. We already had PCR machines. Our PCR machines were one of the biggest things you couldn't get hold of during the pandemic, but we already had them because we were teaching PCR. So it was just perfect that we had all these students and scientists who've since graduated, who are no longer working, that we could call upon to come and join us.
What sort of effect do you think the pandemic had on research as a whole, with things just stopping and say mid experiment, if you like? We had stories of guys having to go into the labs every week and kind of feed whatever it was that they were doing to stop all this really vital research from just being completely wasted.
I think most of it continued. I don't think it ever truly stopped. So you've got to go in and feed yourselves, you've got to go and do certain things to keep that research project alive. I think the people who really suffered was the students, those doing PhDs, those doing their final year of a life sciences degree, and they weren't able to get into labs to be able to continue. Students who were doing the GCSEs weren't able to do their practicals to continue their qualification. So I think they were the real losers in the life science industry, because they just couldn't get into a lab. The real science that was continuing, I think, still happened. But just by keeping the cells alive, or keeping the items they needed to going while everything else stopped.
I guess you were, companies like Bygard were a bit of a lifeline for those people looking for employment. You know, it was a time where people were being furloughed or made redundant, as you said. And the fact that you were contacting them was probably a bit of a welcome relief from no job opportunities. So providing employment for 500 people is fantastic during a time when people were pretty desperate, and you probably knew that they were good as well. So you weren't taking in people you think, oh, they could be good, they might not be good. You trained them, so you probably knew what you were sort of getting in terms of quality of staff. Which is genius. Of those students and the students you're training now, because I know you've grown massively globally, and you must see thousands of students, is there an interest there for sustainability? Obviously, you're implementing some fantastic things within your real labs, the working labs and the biobank. Do they share that sort of passion that you've got, or is it a mixed bag still?
It's a real mixed bag, and it depends what industry they come from. And I think there's a real difference that somebody who comes from the NHS versus somebody who's in private practice or a private lab. There's a different mindset. I find that, I'm generalising, but people who come from the NHS are much more wasteful, because they'll go through so many gloves, they'll use things and just throw it away, because they don't see a budget, and it's just always going to be there. Because we're the NHS, we need it, we'll get it. So it doesn't matter how many things I use. Whereas people who come from private labs, particularly small labs, who are restrained on their budget, I think sustainability for them comes in naturally, because they want to have their processes that only use the required equipment, and then it's disposed of, rather than just being quite wasteful in what they've got.
I see. So it's driven by financial motives as opposed to environmental. I guess the NHS people, you've got to forgive them in some respect, because they're just following an SOP. It's the SOP, or the, you know, the practice that has to change, and they will follow suit. No one wants to get laid off or sued because they've not worn a glove and infected a patient. And you know, so infection control is probably so much higher up the agenda than sustainability, unfortunately.
We see a lot of that, if I'm allowed to say, the wasteful NHS, and the fact that the private hospitals are so much more receptive to some of the ideas 100%. That we present to them, and they chase us, and they're on our case to make sure that we're getting stuff back to them in time. Whereas Mike speaks to the NHS, and I'll be like, yeah, it's a great idea, we're just going to go back to what we were doing before. that's the biggest hurdle with.
It's too much of an animal, isn't it? It's too much of a beast to change. I think that's the issue. No,
it's going to take a lot of people to come together and force the change through than just one guy.
Absolutely.
You do see them, really passionate sustainability managers in the NHS, but they just can't do anything.
And I think Jay's point about financials is correct as well.
Yeah.
With the private organisations, it's pounds and pence, it's bottom line, it's margins. So if they can save money and the environment, fantastic. That's a double
Absolutely.
Win for them. Yeah.
And even if you just looked at gloves, how many gloves do people use a month?
Yeah.
£5 a box. Well, during COVID, they were going for 20,
yeah,
25
it was just crazy, didn't
pound.
It?
Saved a few of them a month.
Yeah.
It all adds up.
Absolutely.
The NHS don't have to force their prices down either.
No.
The cost of private healthcare, if it can come down in line with them saving cash, more people.
Yeah.
The NHS don't have to attract customers.
They get them
too
mentally,
many,
yeah.
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Just end up there anyway.
Yeah. I'm interested in what you're saying about the sort of where the students come from in terms of their experience as opposed to the age. My assumption, probably wrongly, was the young generations are more interested in environmental impact than the old generations. But from what you're saying, it's more what their experience is so far as opposed to their generation.
I think it is experience, particularly if you grow up in a family or with parents or who is concerned about recycling properly, separating, only using what they need to, versus a family who's quite wasteful. I think that travels down to the parents or the family that they have. So I think it all starts at home, and it starts by showing what you can do as a parent.
Well, it becomes habitual, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The done thing, rather than something you've got to actually think about.
Yeah.
And teaching from a young age to put things in the right bin and think about why are we buying it, what are we doing with it. And then when they come into the real world, not the real world, but the working world, having a sustainability champion in the workplace that does an introduction will help that pass through, and then if their mentors are doing it as well. But also I think there's nothing better than seeing the changes firsthand. If you can show students by reducing our CO2, what are we doing, how is that helping the planet? As you walk out and you don't see anything outside, it's only when you go to places that have a direct effect on our CO2 reduction that does it come to life.
Can you just detail where your students sit? They're pre-university students, is that right?
So we have multiple streams. So we have the young adults who are 16 to 19 year old programme. So they're people who are trying to decide, do they want to go into life sciences or medicine or another allied care professional field? So they'll come to us and do like a two-day clinical course, 2-day lab course, and then a mixture of the two on one day, or they'll come and do a 6-week camp with us, a diploma course that looks at emergency medicine science, and they'll get a little insights into every aspect, and they're all taught by real clinicians, real scientists who are doing current research, so they get to have one-on-one time with these students and can give them a real insight into what is happening in the world, what's it like to be working in a hospital, what's it like to work out somewhere remote. But then we also have the government boot camps, the Skills for Life boot camps, so we offer multiple courses of that across the UK. So they could be people who are looking for work, those already in work who want to learn new skills to progress their career. We also have postgraduate courses. It might be that a doctor wants to come and learn cell culture or wants to come and learn a new skill. We teach that. And then we do bespoke courses as well. So a workplace might come to us and say, we've got this new bit of equipment, we need to train all of our staff on it. Can you help build a course that can deliver that and deliver it to a high quality by somebody who knows what they're doing?
Well, yeah, very good. It's great that those younger people especially are getting the sort of grounding in the sustainability things that you do. I'm not aware, and it's been a long time since I was at university, but I'm not aware that that's carried forward into university degrees. Certainly when I was at university, there was no talk of know, trying to be less wasteful or designing experiments that use less plastic. So I don't know if that's the case. Maybe we should get someone on from the university to sort of for a right to reply, but I don't think that carries through. I don't,
yeah, it didn't in my course. I didn't do it life science, I did real estate, but absolutely zero to do with sustainability and sustainable construction materials practices.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't have anything either. We didn't get anything.
Well, let's invite on someone from a university and perhaps
let's change that starting
today. Yeah.
Which, so flipping it on its head, what's the most wasteful thing that you do at Biograd?
Oh, great question.
It's not your car, because I know that's electric.
No, my car's electric.
That's great. The last two guests have come in Tesla, so it's
good.
To see.
I'm so proud that I've got an electric car. It's just a little thing, but it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think it's to do with meeting legal requirements and legislation is probably one of the wasteful things we do. Not meeting the legislation, because we obviously want to meet the legislation.
Such a waste of time,
isn't it? But when you send samples out and you send them blood to another lab, or you have to package them in certain ways. And I think I believe it is quite wasteful. I think it can be done better with alternatives that are recyclable. Or multi-use versus all single-use items. I think that's probably our biggest one, particularly during COVID, and we were getting these 20,000 samples a day. I think 20,000 bags, 20,000 boxes, 20,000 sealable cases that only get used and are only there in case of a spillage, which I completely understand by looking after the people who are transporting them.
Yeah.
But there was definitely other alternatives that could be made, introduced to reduce the amount of single-use plastic.
It shows everyone's got to do their part, doesn't it?
Yeah,
attack it from all angles.
Yeah, and changes of policy and legislation is coming, don't they? It needs to come from the top, essentially. And people are doing what they can. I mean, Dan from Econics was explaining that, you know, their bins meet all the legislation, they're fine to use. That's just an education about getting people to use them. But you know, he's had to design them so they fit to that legislation. Wouldn't it be better to change the legislation so then the manufacturers have to fit the legislation more sustainable? Anyway, that's a bigger question.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't know what in the government do we have to get on?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Not yet. So we've asked what the most wasteful part is. What can you change, do you think, apart from legislation? What do you think you could change, or what are your plans to implement at Biograd in the future?
So I already mentioned our 2035 vision. That's our goal, is to be net zero by that time. And we've got a few key incentives on there. So by this year, we are planning to update our ultra-low freezers to another alternative from the same manufacturer. I don't know if you know the guys that have sorted this for us.
Yeah.
So there, it's a 16% reduction. From what we use now, moving to these new freezers. 2026 is when we want to transition to 100% green energy sources. By 2030, we want to be completely off-grid with on-site solar panels, wind turbines, and maybe be a test bed for other ways of generating power on-site, whether that's partnership with the universities to bring competition into this, because we've only got the three real ways. We've got solar, we've got wind and water. So whether there's something else that can be done for that. And then by the 2035, we want to be net zero on our carbon,
totally self-sustainable.
Which would be fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, credit to Biograd, because a lot of those things require huge upfront costs and expenditure for sort of long-term gain. It's a bit like compound interest. You see the benefit the further you go, and it's great that you've got this 10-year plan, and you'll see a huge benefit by the end the sooner you do it. But a lot of people we speak to can't get over that initial outlay. Unfortunately, the capex isn't available to do it, even though the ROI on whatever the implementation is fantastic in year two. You know, they're going to save a fortune and loads of carbon, but you can't get over that hurdle. So perhaps there needs to be more grant funding available, or companies like Biograd who are willing to put the investment in. You know, you've got a successful, profitable company, and you're reinvesting that, which is great to see.
Low interest government loans would be great.
That would be something.
It used to exist to a certain extent. Back in the day when we did LED lighting conversions, you could make the repayments on the low interest loan by the savings that you make every single month. So these projects were kind of cash positive from day one, that quickly evaporated.
I mean, there's things that other things like you can rent them. Why can't you rent your solar panels? I think that starts, somebody started that, but you rent your solar panels, and then you don't have a huge outlay, and you're not paying for the electric.
Well, the feed-in tariffs disappeared. The great feed-in tariffs that you started, which made selling the energy back to the grid so attractive. Where have they gone?
Yeah,
there's not even that for homes either. It's not as easy for homes anymore.
No. Yeah, the freezer's a great one. I mean, you're probably paying a slight premium for a low energy Heyer freezer, but you're going to see that.
Absolutely.
The lifetime of the freezer, which is 15, 20 years, pay for itself over and over
We'll see it in the first year. We'll see that change straight away in the amount of electric that we use.
Yeah, but universities and the smaller biotechs who don't have that funding, they just can't afford that little jump to get them more sustainable. It's such a shame. And manufacturers are doing all they can to bring down the costs of those better, more efficient technologies, but they are inherently more expensive. Unfortunately, someone has to pay for it, and it's going to have to be the customer. As we go further down the line with product development, hopefully that's the norm. The low energy is the norm, and everyone wins.
So what next for Biograd then?
We're going to continue, obviously, to grow the research tissue bank, and our focus on women's health is the space that we want to be in. It's the space that we're in, something that Dr. Kenny is really passionate about. So that's going to be our main goal for the next 12 months, pushing that, while we're also doing more investment into Biograd. So we are implementing a new clean room, which is a significant investment that will allow us to do advanced therapeutics for things like cancers, leukemias. So this is building dendritic cell vaccines, making dendritic cell vaccines, NK therapy, which is natural killer cells, which can be used against cancers. So advanced therapeutics is where we're heading towards over the next 12 months.
Amazing to see that development in the Northwest. It often gets neglected for funding. Amazing that companies like Biograd are investing it. And even in sort of a more micro vote, which is Wavertree, that tech park used to be a tech park. And I don't know, are you the only people on there doing any kind of tech at the moment?
I think we are the only ones that are there doing tech now. So the NHS is there, but it's their HR.
Yeah.
There's a school, and then there's some GP out of hours. But you've mentioned it before, having this in the Northwest is great. So we've got the Science Triangle down Cambridge, Oxford and London.
Yeah.
But with the devolution of Liverpool City Region and some of the funding and how that's all changing, we're able to be part of that growth and attract businesses to Liverpool and to Liverpool City Region. We've got the Freeport, which is just a fantastic thing to have right on our doorstep.
Yeah.
And we should take great advantage of having that. And when we're talking to companies that are overseas and they want to step into the UK market, or even for us to reach out, like our Shanghai partners that we have, the change in Liverpool, change in the Northwest with the devolution of the councils, it's making a huge difference. And Liverpool, the Northwest, is the place to come now for science. We've got some great talent, great companies, and great partners that we can work with.
Great universities as well. I mean, I'm biased going back to Liverpool, but University of Liverpool, Manchester, John Moores, Hope, Chester, they're all really strong science departments and healthcare departments. So yeah, I totally agree.
And there's a lot of development going on at the moment in the Northwest.
Absolutely.
For the life sciences.
Yeah.
But it's in terms of office buildings as well, office and labs being built everywhere.
There is indeed. And there's been talk about there not being enough lab space in the north of England and in the Northwest. There's lots of lab space.
Yeah.
It's it's just so expensive.
Yeah.
We used to have a place, another place in Liverpool. Don't quote me on the numbers, but I think it was about £45 per square foot.
Wow.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Which is it's twice the standard office rent for around here.
Just for a few lab benches, a sink and a hood.
Yeah.
Where actually it needs to be cheaper. If it's cheaper, we'll attract those big organisations to come to the north, the northwest, Liverpool, you know, and not just speak. Everybody talks about the speak corridor for life sciences. There's so many life sciences companies around the full city region that are not all in speaking. I think that needs a focus in the press as well.
I think everything's relative. Those you went down to that Golden Triangle that you mentioned. I don't know what the square. Pound per square inch, probably double that.
Yeah. It was into the 60s when we were there, when we were at Oxford. Under the new developments, it was £65 per square foot.
And they're screaming out for space as well. Yeah. I mean, they're converting shopping centres into labs, and you think, well, there's so much space up north, come up north.
So you think about the incubators, the companies that are really, really small, haven't yet started, but have got a fantastic idea. Need an incubator to help them, and we don't really have that many in the northwest. And then when they do need their own lab space, they're priced out £65 a square foot.
It's
ridiculous. You know, come up north, it's cheaper. And there's companies that will support you. I think we're quite a friendly group in the north, particularly with all the local companies. We do all speak, we do all work together. We're here to support.
Are you familiar with Liver Labs?
Yeah, we are.
With someone we met not too long ago. They seem to be doing quite a lot of interesting interesting work. In fact, there's somebody, Ifo, if you're watching this.
Very knowledgeable
guest,
guy.
Guest on here, please. It would be lovely to have your expertise.
Yeah. Okay, well, taking it back to sustainability, particularly within in Biograd, obviously you've mentioned your 10-year plan. How achievable is that for healthcare and science to be carbon neutral? Is that a dream, or is it going to be some waste inevitable?
I think there's still going to be some waste, and it depends. I think we're going to have to look at buying into some of these organisations that help offset and to become net zero. I'd like to think it's going to be achievable, and hopefully we get there before 2035.
Yeah.
But we have to just keep working on it. It's something that we can't just talk about. It's something that we have to actively be a part in on a month, week, day, daily basis. Just think about where we're putting our waste. Is it going to be achievable for everybody? No. I think there's too many costs associated with it. While it's not a legal requirement, I don't think we'll ever be truly fully
and isn't
net
it
zero in the health.
We're trying so hard, and the rest of the world doesn't seem to be putting as much effort into it.
Yeah.
It's not even on the agenda in some countries.
Yeah.
It's not even we would have no guests on this podcast in certain countries.
I totally
agree. But I think, as you've highlighted several times so far, the sooner you start, the easier it is, the cheaper it is, and the better the return. Because if some of these things do have an ROI, there's no point starting in 2034 because you're not going to achieve it. So, credit to Biograd for starting well early. I mean, you've been doing it for years, and it's a struggle.
It is a struggle, but worth every bit that we're doing.
And what products and services would you recommend scientists and healthcare providers use that you've seen personally having the biggest impact?
I think gloves is one of the biggest things that you use in healthcare, overused in healthcare. But invest in and pay maybe a little bit more if you can into a better quality of glove that's produced locally, so distance travelled is smaller, CO2 is smaller. And anything that you, again, any product that you can get locally rather than having to import and use local suppliers. It's all going to have a huge impact in reducing the CO2 and being more sustainable.
And if everyone does it, it brings costs down as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
bio bins that you've got here, which you had on last month. We use so many of these every day, and I think they're great.
Yeah.
Even that little change.
That's the classic no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's cheaper, it's more sustainable. There really is no argument against these things, to be honest.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, so where can people learn more about Biograd? I mean, you've done a great job describing exactly what you guys do, but if they're intrigued to know, if they want to do a course, or if they want to do the cord blood or things like that, where can we find you?
So our website is www.biograd.co.uk, and then on there it'll take you to a group of sites that you can pick on. So there's Biograd Education, Biograd Biobank. And the biobank is where you can choose to donate your samples to us to go into the Women's Health Research Tissue Bank. And then we've got Biograd Education, talked about for your courses. And we've also got Biograd Prenatal on there, and Biograd Diagnostics. So if you're looking for a clinical trials partner or a PI or a CI, chief investigator or principal investigator, need help writing proposals for research, it's all things that we can do. Or drop me an email at j.fitzgerald@biograd.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, Jay, I know you're very modest, but something we're aware of with you is the amount of charity work you do. Do you want to give a plug for the charities that you work for as well?
Sure. So the one we've done recently, which thank you both for coming, was the Liverpool Women's Charity for Strictly Come Dancing. Which was a fabulous event, and we think they achieved their fundraising goal for their Honeysuckle Sweets, which is a sweet that can support parents who've really recently gone through a bereavement of their child. And it's a fantastic charity. It's personally helped my family in the last few years. And then there's also St. John Ambulance, something charity work that I've done since I was 12. And they're a fantastic organisation, bringing healthcare out into the community at your sporting events, festival gardens and things. So they're another one that we can also support.
Brilliant.
Well, thanks for coming on, Jay. It's been really enlightening. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Anybody watching, like, subscribe, hit the bell icon, and you won't miss any more really interesting people on our podcast over the coming months. We've got a few lined up. Thanks to our sponsor again. We've still got the biscuits from Lek Medical.
Yeah.
They brought a lot, so they might still be here next month as well. And CJ Optic, you've actually got a microscope there.
We have, yeah. We've gone all out on the advertising this month. We've got the
backdrop. You should have brought some Biograd stuff.
Yeah, you should have. Yeah.
This isn't an advertorial, Jay. It's just, but if you would like to see our microscopes, you can pop down to our offices and have a quick go.
Yeah. So you can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And as Alex said, please subscribe, please like. It does help the algorithm. It gets out to more people. And follow us on LinkedIn as well. But thank you, Jay. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome. Welcome back anytime.
You are?
I meant I'll come back anytime.
No, thank you. No, but you are very welcome anytime.